Welcome to our new podcast, The Grand Tour of Italy, The Lure of the Antique.
I'm Linda.
And I'm Michael. We invite you to join us every fortnight as we visit some of the most glorious works of art ever created and the most spectacular sights witnessed by the grand tourists in the 18th century. Together we have planned an itinerary which will bring us through the Italian peninsula over 2,000 years of artistic history. We won't bring you to the main museums and monuments, but instead we will bring you behind the scenes to places few visitors ever know about, not even the Italians themselves.
Yes, we plan to take you to Turin, to Venice, Siena, Florence, Rome, Naples, Palermo, amongst other cities, towns and villages which capture the hearts and minds of the young aristocrats on their great adventure. Well, there will be other stops along the way, but these are, of course, the main places. I'm an art historian and I have interests in the classical world and its reception in the 18th and 19th century.
I studied Greek and Roman civilization at University College Dublin before doing postgraduate studies at the Pontifical Institute of Christian Archaeology in Rome.
So we are clearly both passionate about art and we both have lived in Italy for various periods of time. And that is why we want to share with you some of our great experiences. We've been grounded for so long due to COVID and we're all anxious to get travelling again if possible. So we have many places earmarked to see. In the meantime, perhaps this will be an enjoyable way to visit in your mind's eye as we pass over the Alps and into along the glorious plains of Lombardy into Turin and into Italy.
So let's start with the work of a painter who was deeply influenced by Italy and spent most of his life in Rome. Nicolas Poussin was born in Normandy and active in Paris between 1612 and 1623 before going to Rome. He interpreted Baroque art and brought an intellectual rigour to the existing classical repertoire with a wide range of scenes from the revelry to civic virtue with different states of mind depicted in his paintings, as we shall see.
Nicolas Poussin was the leading painter of classical French Baroque style. He was born on the 15th of June in Les Andelys, it's a northern French department. Interestingly, though, in this context, he spent most of his working life in Rome, where he dies in 1665. So let's look at one of his greatest works, A Dance to the Music of Time, which is in the Wallace Collection at the moment. I think it was painted between 1634 to 1636. And Michael, you were at the National Gallery recently where you saw an exhibition on the great French painter, lucky you. So what did you think of it?
Well, it was very interesting and I learned a lot about Poussin, in particular how he made small wax and clay models about 6 inches tall or so. These he moulded into the shape of the figures he intended to paint. The reason was not what I expected. It was actually so that he could place a candle near them and thus observe how the light fell. So the whole idea, I imagine, was to give him a concept of where to put the highlights and where to put the shadows. But in all honesty, the amount of paintings and drawings was perhaps a little thin, but it did give me more time to concentrate on the works which were on display. There were quite a few people there. On a couple of occasions, I think I was the only person in the room, maybe one or two others, but I don't even think so. So we have a copy of the painting here, and let's have a look at it and see why people made such a fuss over this work. It's quite small.
Yes, in fact, it's, I think, 32 by 41 inches and set into a really elaborate gold frame. It's normally held in the Wallace Collection in London, which itself is a wonderful gallery and packed with artworks and something that you really should, you know, make a note of going to if you happen to be in London. But also, like the National Gallery, it is free to the public, so it was given to the public in perpetuity.
It's a great place to see, and sadly, few people know about this hidden gem, the Wallace Collection. Londoners are aware, but not a lot of tourists. So if you're taking notes, put it in your notebook, the Wallace Collection, just off Oxford Circus, behind Oxford Circus.
On the other hand, that may be a blessing, not so many visitors. So let's look at the painting. This is one of Poussin's allegories, which itself means something with a hidden meaning, as I'm sure you're familiar with that idea. And it was inspired by the Roman poet Ovid, whose Metamorphoses brought us the whole notion of Bacchic revelries. So to delve into this, we have to have a look in more detail at the painting to understand it. And interestingly, it was inspired by a poem written by a future pope.
Poussin was 30 when he moved to Rome in 1624. The newly elected Pope Urban VIII, who was of the Barberini family, was a celebrated patron of the arts and encouraged like-minded ecclesiastics to commission artists to embellish the Eternal City. So it was all about making Rome the most magnificent, restored city in the ancient world. Poussin was mesmerized by the ruins of classical Rome, which he explored and sketched with great enthusiasm, and many of his sketchbooks still exist. He was fortunate to meet the Pope's brother, Cardinal Francesco Barberini, who offered him several private commissions. The introduction also permitted Poussin to access other members of the Roman nobility. In the 1630s, Poussin was presented to Giulio Rospigliosi, a member of a minor aristocratic family in Pistoia, and an official at the Apostolic Signatura, and that was the office which looked after the signing of documents. So Rospigliosi was later to become a cardinal in 1657, and he himself then became pope between 1667-69. Between 1634 and 36, Poussin, as you said, Linda, painted an oil canvas according to the prelate's design. The work was to depict an allegory of the four seasons, but it developed more or less into a Wheel of Fortune, a popular theme in medieval art. And such allegorical paintings focused on the unpredictability of life. So at the centre of the canvas, we see four figures joined in a dance. The barefoot male figure, whose back we see in semi-profile, is interpreted possibly as poverty. He reaches out towards labour, dressed in a simple orange tunic. She, in turn, stretches out her hand towards the elegant personification of wealth, who wears golden sandals and whose blonde hair is braided with pearls. The fourth figure, then pleasure, wears silver sandals and coyly gazes at the viewer. On her head, she wears a band of pink roses, while her blue cape slips from her shoulder. At pleasure's feet sits a little putto, or pudgy infant, beloved by the Baroque artists. The child blows bubbles to symbolise the fleeting nature of life. A garlanded pillar then over to the left of the painting depicts the bearded face of Janus, who impassively observes the scene. Bacchus, the god of wine and merriment, appears as a dual youthful and elder statesman. So the month of January is named after the Roman god Janus. The deity is often depicted with two heads, one gazing forwards, the other looking backwards. On the other side of the painting, on the right side, Father Time strums a lyre, while Laputo looks quizzically as the sands of time run through an hourglass. Above all these figures appears Apollo in his golden chariot. In outstretched arms, he holds a golden ring, symbolizing both the sun and the course of the day. And again, once more, we can interpret this as the course of time. Beyond the chariot dance the hours, happily mirroring the scene below. The four horses are preceded by Aurora, the goddess of dawn in Greek mythology, who sprinkles drops of sunlight through the morning clouds.
And of course, wonderful colour, rich in different textures and colours, the painting. And Michael, you've given us such a clear kind of overview and idea of its composition. In terms of these very, you know, illustrious figures, Giulio Rospigliosi, he was a highly cultured prelate who composed poetry and the libretti for opera, which itself was a musical art form which had emerged some 30 years earlier. Interestingly, the National Gallery of Scotland preserves a pen and ink drawing which Poussin prepared for his patron Rospigliosi. and they may or may not have discussed, but it's likely, the commission with the artist together, and that they modified the theme. And also we should note our own National Gallery has Poussin, which are National Gallery in Dublin, visible and available on, you know, any day you're passing, well worth popping in to have a look. Allegories themselves were highly popular in the 17th century, and the viewer was invited to contemplate how somebody born in poverty could improve their situation through work. And those who worked diligently were able to save and even become, you know, better in terms of their station in life. There was always a caveat: wealth bears responsibilities, and those who gain riches should be on their guard against luxury, which tends to whittle away your resources. If they're not careful, they might also fall back into poverty, and therefore the circle of life continues. So Poussin returns to France in 1640. He himself enticed by a more, I suppose, prestigious position at the court of Louis the 14th. And although he enjoys the patronage of Cardinal Richelieu, the French Prime Minister, Poussin was, yeah, he wasn't so happy to be back in France. And by 1641, we find him again in Rome, where he stays until his death in 1665 at the age of 71. He also, for his, maybe sadly, he didn't actually live to see his great patron, Cardinal Ruspigliosi, elected as Pope Clement the IX. And yeah, Michael, where should we find copies of the painting?
Well, the easiest thing to do, I think, is probably just go on the internet if you don't have access to a library. The internet, I find, has magnificent resources. There are now digital archives of just about every painting that was ever put on canvas or on fresco. So that's where I always go. And this one is magnificent. And one of the great things about looking perhaps on your tablet or your computer is the colors become so vibrant. And nowadays we're a television generation, we're a screen generation. So we're very used to looking at this. But of course, it's quite different from the original canvas itself. So it's not apples and oranges or lemons and oranges. It's something you've got to maybe wrestle with. Do you want to see the original? Go to the Wallace Collection. Or until you get there, you can always look on screen.
So join us next time and cross the Alps and head down to the glorious city of Turin. So ciao until next time.
Arrivederci.